New Zealanders want and deserve a transparent and comprehensive inquiry into the COVID-19 response, not another whitewash. That's why RCR is bringing you a special segment aimed at examining the terms of reference, as well as what the country's best and brightest minds believe should be put on the table and why. The inquiry sessions will endeavour to unpack everything we already know and all the things we still don't know about how the COVID response was handled and what needs to be included in any new inquiry so that New Zealanders can get answers, justice and a future free from government overreach. Welcome to the inquiry sessions. Welcome to the inquiry sessions on Reality Check Radio. My name is Alastair Harding and what you're going to hear today is potentially the most explosive edition of the inquiry sessions yet. And I don't say that lightly. Ever since the dawn of the COVID hysteria in early 2020, knowledge has dripped out or come to the surface that has threatened to upend the official narrative on countless occasions. But each time they've been suppressed or debunked or ignored, and maybe what you're about to hear today will suffer the same fate. But there is a little bit of a difference this time, because what you're about to hear is a shocking revelation about the COVID vaccines that has been simmering for a long time. And officialdom has never actually been able to debunk it entirely. And now I understand they're actually admitting to parts of it, which means that the court system in Australia is now dealing with it. What I'm talking about is the knowledge that the COVID vaccines are actually genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. And to explain what that means and what it entails and implies, I have with me today Julian Gillespie. Julian is a former barrister from Australia who's been instrumental alongside Voices for Freedom's own head of legal, Katie Ashby-Coppins, in uncovering this bombshell that we're about to talk about. And by the by, he and Katie also worked together to develop the terms of reference for the Australian People's COVID Inquiry. And so, welcome, Julian, to the inquiry sessions. Thank you very much for joining me today here on Reality Check Radio.
Alistair Harding, pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Okay, so first, I'd just like you to tell the audience the top line of what we're talking about here today. We'll get into the story of how you uncovered it and what you've been doing about it in a short while. But to start with, can you just take me through? We're talking about the true nature of the COVID injection products, aren't we?
Yes, and with specific reference to the Pfizer and Moderna products in Australia, South Africa, the United Kingdom, the European Union, covering all of Europe, of course, and America, and to a similar degree, but with a slight exception, the FDA, the Pfizer and Moderna drugs clearly satisfy legal definitions for being properly deemed and called genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, and this information has been intentionally withheld from the citizens of all of those nations and jurisdictions in order to roll out those drugs as quickly as possible, and more importantly, to not alert the citizens of those jurisdictions as to the true nature of the substances.
Okay, we've all heard the term GMO in reference to food. Is that what we're talking about here? What does that actually mean in this context?
Genetically modified organisms take on a variety of roles depending on the purpose, the end use. And yes, they were introduced to public conscience when I was a little kid back in the 80s for the purpose of genetically modifying tomatoes or strawberries to stop them suffering from frostbite. And the controversy then, appropriately, was, well, if I ingest that genetically modified strawberry, is there any risk that it is going to really gain entry into the nucleus of my cell and interfere with my human DNA? And for decades now, that has been shown not to be a risk when you ingest very, very minimally altered GMO produce. When it comes to a therapeutic or a drug, in the context of the COVID-19 injections, well, those things, of course, are delivered directly into the deltoid muscle. And thereafter, as subsequent studies, even from the manufacturers, have shown and proven, they're biodistributed throughout the human body, crossing the blood-brain barrier, being delivered to the spleen, heart, kidneys, testes, ovaries, you name it, it goes everywhere. And what we're talking about then is genetically modified nucleic acids, synthetic mod RNA, synthetic RNA, protected in a lipid nanoparticle envelope, safely traveling through the bloodstream to be efficiently delivered into each individual's cells. And the question then, since these do meet the legal definitions in so many jurisdictions, is, well, what are these synthetic modified RNAs? And we'll talk about the DNA contamination separately. What risk do they pose to my natural DNA? And but one step before that, why are we asking these questions now? These are questions which should have been posed by our drugs regulators, MedSafe in your country, the TGA in my country. And why is it now fallen to citizens, lawyers, and scientists to say, well, hold on, Houston, we've got a problem here. It should have been the regulator saying, Houston, we've got a problem here, when Pfizer and Moderna first came a knocking.
Well, I remember very early on, as early as I think around 2020, when we first started talking about the vaccines, that people started talking about these issues back then, maybe in a lot more simple terms, but people have been talking about this problem for a long time, haven't they?
Yes, and those persons who raised the concerns in 2020, they just didn't do it, you know, via social media. They wrote peer-reviewed papers, which were published in 2020. They were aware of the proposed new platform that was going to be introduced for these so-called vaccines. Of course, they're not vaccines, but employing the LNP-mod RNA platform, which had never been used on a population scale basis before. The science behind those LNP-mod RNA complexes has been around. They've been tinkering with this stuff for over 20 years. So the scientists who spoke in 2020 were trying to alert the general public and regulators, indeed directly they were putting their material to the regulators, to say this technology platform has only got a history of failure. Moderna, for instance, has been tinkering with the same platform 10 years before COVID, and in every clinical trial, none of those trials went through to a successful third phase because in their first phase, they deal with animals. The animals all died. Those that managed to progress beyond the first phase into second and then early human trials, it killed the humans because, A, the LNPs themselves are so massively inflammatory. They set up a range of disease. And then there's just the problem with the synthetic cargo that they contain. In the Moderna trials, they were producing cancers, quite simply. And so they had to be stopped. But yet, when it came to COVID, all of a sudden, they got relabeled vaccines, which allowed them to not have to perform a range of safety tests. Mm. And one issue, which they couldn't avoid, so they tried to sweep it under the carpet, and this is what our legal proceedings have done here in Australia. We've lifted the carpet, so to say, and said, look, before in Australia, Pfizer and Moderna could go to the TGA for final provisional approval for these things to be deployed, both manufacturers were required to stop off at the Office of the Gene Technology Regulator and submit applications to obtain GMO licenses. Now, that's not anything new. AstraZeneca went to the Office of the Gene Technology Regulator here in Australia, submitted a GMO application, and then went through a prolonged and extensive risk assessment and risk management plan process, which required by law that all state stakeholders or specialists in those states needed to be asked for their views about this GMO drug. And a specialist advisory group, the Gene Technology Technical Advisory Committee, was composed to advise our gene technology regulator, Dr. Raj Bhullar, about whether or not that drug should be granted a GMO license. AstraZeneca was granted a GMO license, but on the basis of a flawed risk assessment, because we know AstraZeneca, soon after being rolled out, killed countless Australians from blood clots, amongst other side effects. And seeking to avoid the same problems, or probably many more, when Pfizer and Moderna stepped up, somehow they were ushered through a side door and said, don't worry about your GMO application, just go straight to the TGA. Now, okay. I just want to make it very clear, these GMO definitions in Australia, they're almost identical to those found in South Africa, the United Kingdom, European Union, and by a separate but almost similar route, almost exactly the same in America under FDA guidance. In October of last year, on the 24th of October last year, we've got a senator here who's been a real champion, Senator Gerard Rennick, amongst a few others. He's been aware of these issues because we've been keeping him up to speed on all of our knowledge in this area from the legal proceedings that we've been trying to get heard in this country. So he became very, very knowledgeable in the same science. As a senator, he's entitled to grill basically any bureaucrat in the country as to what they're up to and following the law. He managed to get our gene technology regulator, Dr. Raj Bhullar, in front of him to undergo cross-examination. And the result of that was, on the 24th of October last year, she admitted on public record that yes, indeed, the Pfizer and Moderna drugs are GMOs. They are GMOs.
Okay, but I've also read press releases from her office, I believe, the Australian Government's Office of Gene Technology. And this particular press release that I'm looking at, it's dated 6th of December, 2023, and it has a title, Addressing Misinformation on the Regulation of mRNA Vaccines. It states categorically, I quote, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are not GMOs, end quote. And therefore, there is no license required. That's what the press release says. I've also seen another statement from the same office that states, quote, COVID-19 mRNA vaccines do not meet the definition of a GMO in the Gene Technology Act of 2000, so do not require a license from the gene technology regulator. The vaccines do not contain a GMO. They seem pretty sure that you're barking up the wrong tree. Is this the same person that admitted to the senators that they were GMOs?
Yes. It's entirely of the same origin. And so the first thing I will say is that those press releases are, one, a lie, a straight out and out lie. And second, how does she deal with her own testimony in a Senate Estimates Committee where she's admitted that these are in fact GMOs? So she's trying to blindside and lie to the public so as not to create a controversy. In the background, she's hoping that the judiciary will corruptly try and put our GMO proceedings under the soil and make them go away, so she's not ultimately pulled out and made to undergo cross-examination in the proceedings where we show her the same admission before a Senate Estimates Committee. There's a lot at stake for Dr. Raj Bhullar. She's been made the fall guy in this country because had she properly... Look, we've got in our GMO proceedings in the federal court from Pfizer, we've got documents from Pfizer admitting that they went and knocked on Dr. Raj Bhullar's door in late 2020. That is to say...
Sorry, that's Pfizer and Moderna actually identified this problem right from the beginning. Is that what you're saying?
We have it at least an admission from Pfizer that they went and approached the gene technology regulator because the definitions are really that clear. Pfizer was able to work it out. They've had to contemplate those definitions in all those other jurisdictions. And so they went and approached Dr. Raj Bhullar about what are we going to do about the GMO application we're meant to submit with your office? And at the time, she said, based on limited information, okay, she said, come back to me when you've got more information, but otherwise go straight to the TGA. And so she ushered them through the side door and straight to the TGA.
Could you tell me again, what's the purpose of her office? Why is this such an issue that they require that office, they require these laws? What's the legal implication here?
Well, it's the same risk considerations as with the strawberries. You have to ultimately ask the question, is there any risk to human DNA from introducing these substances, well, in this case, directly into the bloodstream of people. So it's bypassed the defenses of the digestion system. And yes, once it's been injected, Can it ultimately gain entry into the nucleus of human cells and interfere with human DNA? That's what the Office of the Gene Technology Regulator is meant to assess and receive studies on, to be able to come to a very firm position of if that risk exists or not. Now, we're talking about a product nucleoside, a genetic cargo, which is it's cloaked, if you like, by the LNP, so it can safely travel through the bloodstream, and that those LNPs safely deliver that nuclear cargo inside cells to cross the cell membrane. It's called transfection. That's the entire purpose of LNPs, to safely and efficiently transfect or deliver the genetic cargo inside cells. Now, once it's inside the cells, it's in its playground, so to say. It's avoided all the defense mechanisms that we find in the bloodstream. The bloodstream has got defense mechanisms, which is always picking up foreign RNA and foreign DNA, which we just take in on a daily basis from our surrounding environment. Okay, so it's not new, but we've got a very good defense mechanism for picking up that rubbish and destroying it very, very quickly. Now, naked DNA or RNA, if it's found in the bloodstream, gets obliterated in seconds. The LNP protects, cloaks, delivers it to the cells. Once it's in the cells, well, then what's it going to do next? Now, the regulators all said, oh, the RNA, the synthetic RNA, will only go into the cytoplasm, go to ribosomes, and produce the synthetic spike protein. And soon afterwards, the synthetic RNA will be destroyed. Well, that's rubbish for a start, because they modified the RNA to be almost impervious to destruction. I mean, they're finding this stuff still circulating in people up to 300 days after their injections. And so these things are continuously producing spike proteins. Now, the synthetic spike protein has a portion of it, which is called an NLS, a nuclear localization signal. Nuclear localization signal operates effectively as a free pass for that spike protein to gain entry into the cell nucleus. It's NLSs, or nuclear localization signals, have been understood for decades and decades and decades. So not only is the spike protein gaining very easy and ready access to the nucleus, and it's already been proven to be gaining access to the nucleus, but the spike protein has an affinity with the synthetic mod RNA which produced it. They bind together, and the synthetic spike protein is carrying the synthetic mRNA into the nucleus, right? So that's how it's gaining entry. The science on that was established, when was that? That was late 2022, and that was in the paper by Alden. And that is the lab results, which have just proven what I've just said, gaining entry into the nucleus. But one step further, you said, what does this stuff do? Well, they discovered once it's gaining entry into the nucleus, the modified RNA is reverse transcribing into human DNA. So it's becoming a part of the human genome.
Okay. But I've also read, in opposition to what you're saying, people that are arguing against your position here, they'll cite studies in mice that show that there's no evidence of these things happening, that yes, it does get into the cell, but it's not changing your genes.
Alice, I have to stop you there. What studies? What studies? Because we put our studies to the TGA here in Australia and said this is confirming entry into the nucleus and confirming integration with human DNA. What studies have you got to disprove? Now, you're saying they've got my studies. We haven't seen those studies. We've never seen those studies. They've never been presented to us as a defense. So they're making that up. And if you want to go to a further paper, well, all these references that I'm speaking to in this interview, they're all based in scientific peer-reviewed papers. Now, there was a paper produced in early 2021. It was by an associate professor, Domino Lozelet, I think. I always pronounce his name incorrectly. It's in the peer-reviewed paper, quote, "The Canaries in the Human DNA Mine." And This professor put out his paper in 2021, and it's a very simple title. It says, what about the science of retroposition? Now, the science of retroposition has been with us for probably about 50 years now, and indeed it was firmly established with the granting of a Nobel Prize. The science of retroposition really is, in a nutshell, explaining how mRNA, messenger RNA, is very, very naturally reverse transcribed into DNA using an enzyme called reverse transcriptase, which is found throughout the human body as expressed by a series of genes called line one. Now, line one is found in those parts of our body where there's, well, you get more line one where there's lots of cellular division going on. So if you look at the testes, for instance, we're always creating lots and lots of sperm. So that means there's lots of cell division going on. Wherever there's lots of cell division going on, there's lots of line one. So therefore, there's lots of reverse transcriptase. So whenever there's an mRNA that gains entry into the nucleus, if there's lots of reverse transcriptase there, it's like, boom, okay, that's all the mRNA needs to be reverse transcribed and turned into and integrated into human DNA. So it's a very, very well-established area of science. And so for all of our regulators, since these COVID drugs were rolled out, to say, oh, there's no chance that it can interfere with DNA, that, again, was an out-and-out lie, because this science has been around for 50 years. But all of a sudden, they strangely forgot that it ever existed.
Okay, so have you taken this up with the Australian government or the Australian medicines regulator, and what's happened when you have tried to do that?
Well, the Australian regulator, the TGA, it's meant to be a science-based organisation, and so they live and die by peer-reviewed science papers. In early 2022, when we brought our first proceedings to the AVN, we were alerted to these papers, particularly the Alden paper, showing that the synthetic RNA is gaining entry into the nucleus and it's integrating with the DNA. We presented those to Dr. Brendan Murphy. He's the former Secretary of Health, the fellow responsible for approving these drugs in this country. And we said, look, Brendan, here we go. This was placed directly into his hand, our lawyers to his lawyers. Okay, so we know it came to his attention. Now, as a scientist, he was meant to come back with whatever handful of papers, peer-reviewed papers, to show us why this particular Alden paper was nonsense or couldn't be relied upon, whatever. Instead, we got the discourteous response of no reply at all, no reply at all. Now, as a man who's charged with the safety of all Australians with respect to any drugs that his department approves, as soon as we dropped on his desk a paper confirming DNA integration, his next responsible step, indeed, as he was obliged to under the TGA legislation here, was to call an immediate halt to the deployment of those drugs in this country to conduct further investigations into this DNA integration issue. Instead, he remained silent and used the courts to try and hold us out. So this has been this ongoing battle that we've been conducting here in Australia, which has now culminated into what's called the GMO proceedings, which many of your listeners will be aware of. Katie Ashby-Coppins, she is spearheading those as the instructing solicitor of record, and this is just squarely putting the GMO issue directly to Pfizer and to Moderna, who are our defendants.
Okay, so you're not going after the Australian government and the regulators now, you're going straight at Pfizer and Moderna.
Yes, because the Australian courts, we have found, to put it bluntly, we'll just call it what the punters in the street call it, they're corrupted on matters of COVID. Now, really, their paymaster is the government. There's meant to be a thing called the separation of powers doctrine where you shouldn't care that the defendant is a government official and has perhaps done wrong. Well, on this occasion, after they had rolled it out to millions of Australians, we come to court with the evidence to show that these things, A, were illegally approved, and B, they also contained GMOs. They closed ranks around the secretary, and using public law legal technicalities, they held us out on the issue of standing, saying that our parties were not properly aggrieved to bring these proceedings in public law against the Secretary of Health. And so that was a device. They weren't saying that the merits of our evidence was no good, or that our underlying pleadings showing that these were illegally approved were no good. They were using this initial device saying, oh, you haven't got the standing to bring these proceedings in the first place. And it's like, well, hold on. We've got evidence to show that there's preventable deaths and injuries occurring, but you want to talk about standing? Shouldn't you just be concerned about the preventable deaths and injuries? So that ended up being a waste of time and money. We've been failed by the High Court and Federal Court here in Australia. So we instead went the private law route, which was to sue Pfizer and Moderna directly to stop these legal devices holding us out from getting our evidence in. And it's still proving a task because we had our judge in the GMO proceedings remarkably and incredibly try to use this same legal device standing to hold us out. But we've subsequently discovered and alerted the Australian public that she also actually represented Pfizer for 5 significant cases when she was a barrister, and she failed to tell us in court of these matters. And so she's clearly got some conflicts of interest going on.
Is this a failure of the legal system? We've seen failures across science, journalism, throughout all of this saga that we've been going through. Is this also a failure of the legal system, or is there a corruption going on?
It's, you know, failure is a very polite way to put it, and it sort of suggests that the judges sort of aren't getting it, they're not understanding the science, or, look, they're all very, very intelligent people. You don't become a justice of the federal or high court without a great degree of knowledge and intellect and intelligence. And they understand the science. They understand our evidence. What they do understand, though, is that for us to have a win in the previous proceedings against Brendan Murphy, the former Secretary of Health, or indeed now in the GMO proceedings against Pfizer and Moderna, that ultimately will open up the floodgates of legal liability in the governments of this country. So that's what it's not a failure of judiciary, it's a corruption of judiciary, because they're seeking to protect the Commonwealth government, particularly in this country, from massive legal liability. So we've got to call a spade a spade. They're just doing the wrong thing. We've got a bad era of judiciary here.
And as you alluded to right up the top of this interview, the implications of this are not just Australian. This travels around the world, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And so let's quickly go over the jurisdictions. Now, New Zealand has almost the same GMO definitions that we have here in Australia. There's 3 essential criteria that need to be satisfied, and we've gone through this with all of the PhDs in molecular biology just to make sure that we're right on every point. One is any biological entity, tick. That's what the LNP-mod RNA complexes are. Second is capable of transferring genetic material. And the third is created by recombinant technology. Now, the third is satisfied because you need recombinant technology to make these drugs. The second, capable of transferring genetic material, it's a little bit different in New Zealand. You don't have it as clearly stated as that. And so this is why MedSafe managed to say, oh, we missed a bullet there. Our definitions don't quite satisfy it being called a GMO. But they knew. Here's the thing, they knew in New Zealand that in every other jurisdiction, it does satisfy the GMO definitions, right? So they played very fast and loose with the New Zealand people, where they could have said, oh, look, this is new technology. The New Zealand definitions, when they were created, really weren't thinking about the LNP part, protecting the nuclear cargo. We perhaps should inform the New Zealand people that in other jurisdictions, this is regarded as a GMO, and so you might want to sort of think about that for your informed consent purposes. In Australia, all those 3 definitions clearly satisfy. The transferring, capable of transferring genetic material, that's just a physical movement, Alistair. The LNPs transport this nuclear cargo throughout the body and then deliver it, transfect it into cells. That's transferring physically genetic material throughout the body. Same definitions in South Africa. they created this exemption for, you know, any drug being delivered for a, quote, declared state of emergency, the GMO laws didn't apply. They just made that ad hoc to help these things go through. So that was an illegal exemption in South Africa. In the United Kingdom, exactly the same GMO definitions. So the MHRA, their genetics unit, they knew right from the get-go that these things were GMOs, but part of the route by which Pfizer and Moderna put their applications in, there was this obscure regulation that said, oh, but if you're making an application as a therapeutic product, you don't have to declare to the public that these things are GMOs. And so we had the MHRA, their drugs regulator, know that they were GMOs, but Pfizer and Moderna got this last-minute concession that, oh, you don't have to deliver us a GMO brief. So they knew that they were GMOs, didn't have to put it on the product label, but they decided not to tell the UK population about these things. And so it's ridiculous. In the European Union, same GMO definitions, but there was no ability in the United European Union for Pfizer and Moderna not to inform the public there. The EMA, European Medicines Agency, just completely illegally turned a blind eye. Pfizer and Moderna were required as part of their application processes to submit what's called GMO dossiers, speaking to the risks associated with their GMO products. And then that was meant to require a public consultation period of up to 8 months to allow the public to make submissions. They illegally blocked that because it would have informed all of Europe these are GMOs, and every PhD in the area would have put in submissions saying, are you joking? These things are going to poison the genome. Now, in America, different route. When submitting to the FDA, they were required to submit what's called environmental assessments. It sounds a little bit strange, but those environmental assessments would have required Pfizer and Moderna to alert the FDA to the GMO and gene therapy nature of the drugs. The FDA illegally said, you do not have to give us environmental assessments, and then that meant they pushed it off to a different committee, and they never had to alert the American public to the fact that these things are GMOs. And again, another 8 month consultation period where all the PhDs, private PhDs, would have piled in and said to the responsible committee, had it been given to the responsible committee, gene committee there, these things are going to threaten the DNA of all US citizens, and all US citizens would have learnt this fact and they would have stepped back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the implications if you lose this case?
Well, the implications are one that we can't lose this, Alistair, because for our GMO proceedings, we've only got to do two things with the court. One, we've got to step the court through the GMO definitions here and show that they apply. But as I mentioned from the outset, that's job's already been done for us, because the gene technology regulator in this country, Dr. Raj Bular, on 24 October last year in our Senate Estimates Committee, in answer to questions from Senator Gerard Reddick, admitted that the Pfizer and Moderna products are GMOs. That's a matter of the Hansard parliamentary record. People can go and Google that. Now, where her department has subsequently come out with these lies and these statements, it's like, it doesn't matter what she says in these PR releases. She said what she said before the Senate Estimates Committee. Right, so it's a gross line, but she went on to qualify. Let me be clear here. She said, yes, they are GMOs, but the manufacturing process occurs offshore and we can't regulate that. Right, and then that was her excuse. It's like, well, hold on, just so your listeners are clear. Most GMOs that come to Australia are produced overseas, and so no GMO license is required with respect to the manufacturing step. But as soon as you wish to import them, and then subsequently transport, store, and then dispose, each one of those steps is called a dealing. Import, transport, storage, and disposal. You need to get a GMO license for any one of those. And so that's, she's not telling everyone the rest of the story. She was meant to go on and say, yes, they were meant to get GMO licenses from us for the importation and transportation. That's where she's on the hook. for not being candid and honest.
Okay. Are you sure of your science here? Because it sounds like the implications here are massive. And I guess my fear here is that this is, we've been living through for the last 4 years with this story, with this saga. It's just been the promulgation of fear throughout the world. Are you sure that what you're talking about is not just a different brand of fear, the fear that we're being genetically modified as human beings?
It's not a fear. I mean, the GMO laws came into existence because the science had confirmed that GMOs interfere, if allowed access, with human DNA. Why do you have GMO laws which state that they're there to protect the health of the public unless you've already identified a risk from earlier scientific studies? And those scientific studies, they started back in the early 50s indeed. And they were confirming, oh, yeah, if you introduce foreign DNA or even RNA into all sorts of cells, into the nucleus particularly, we get a level of what's called genomic integration. Now, here's where the story gets really, really full on. We've been, initially, it was all about the synthetic RNA and the risk it poses as a GMO when wrapped in the LNPs to the human genome. Kevin McKernan, who was the chief scientist on the Human Genome Project. That was a few decades ago, and I know the Human Genome Project well. My brother, an associate professor in genetic epidemiology, was a member there. Now, Kevin McKernan, he's the guy who has just perfected what's called sequencing, being able to identify what's in a vial of anything. You know, what's the nature of what's in a vial of any liquid? And he received some of these COVID drugs from Pfizer and Moderna. And very, very quickly, because he's the leading global expert in this area, came out with a Substack article in February of last year saying, Houston, we've got a problem. The DNA, synthetic DNA used to create this synthetic RNA, which is meant to be filtered out before you get, you know, just the LNP mRNA, they haven't filtered it out. And it's in grossly excessive levels. By one measure on one series of vials, up to 35% of the volume in that vial is synthetic DNA. Synthetic DNA. In other volume, in other vials, to be clear, some of this comes through as an impurity, and it's been understood globally, you can't have any more than 10 nanograms of synthetic DNA as a residual contaminant in any one shot that somebody receives for any drug, right? Because lots of drugs have been using synthetic DNA in the manufacturing process. In these vials, it's up to 509 times above the legal limit, above the legal limit. Now, the same synthetic DNA is being protected by the LNPs and safely transported throughout the human body and delivered into cells. And unlike, you know, there's a bit of fiddling around for the mRNA to get into the nucleus, the synthetic DNA has got a free pass. As soon as it's delivered into the cell, it's got a free pass. Particularly the Pfizer product, it's got a particular sequence there which just draws it in, indeed draws it into the nucleus of human cells. Okay? Now, we've got this excessive DNA contamination, which is another form of insidious GMO, right? It is another form of GMO. But it's not allowable in any quantity of this nature, okay? Mm. This has been confirmed by McKernan's lab, Dr. Shin Lee in the US, and he used Sanger sequencing, which confirmed all of Kevin McKernan. Dr. Koning up in Germany, a crew up in the Netherlands, a crew over in Japan, and another crew led by David Speicher, Dr. Jessica Rose, Dr. Wiseman, and Kevin McKernan again, up in Canada. 27 vials in Canada confirming excessive DNA contamination, which is, again, as I say, another form of GMO, which at these levels you wouldn't be able to get a single drug through any approval process had that been discovered from the get-go. Now, is this scaremongering? No, it's just science, which has been reconfirmed independently by all those multiple labs in all those different countries and jurisdictions that I mentioned. How's that scaremongering? We're just trying to alert the public to this. It's not a little dirty secret. This is a global contamination issue.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap up because we've run out of time, but I do want to find out what's the next steps with the court case taking on Pfizer and Moderna, and where can people find all of this? I need you to mention about your Substack and all the different websites where people can find out more.
Yeah, okie doke. Now, the GMO proceedings, we had the judge return what's called a perverse decision on 1 March seeking to kick us out using the legal standing technicality. As I mentioned, we found out subsequently this judge is conflicted to the hilt, having represented Pfizer on previous occasions. And we now have an Australian constitutional legal crisis where she could be hauled before Parliament and kicked off the bench. In the meantime, we put the complaint squarely to the Chief Justice of the Federal Court, Deborah Mortimer, pointing all of these out, all these factors out. She's got to deal with that. Give us a new judge, start the proceedings all over again, and give us a judge that really doesn't have any conflicts of interest and work for Pfizer and earn hundreds of thousands of dollars. All of that information and much, much more, all of these science issues that we've been speaking about here today, Alistair, and all the peer-reviewed references can be found in a multitude of, well, it's not too many. You can get through it in one evening's reading. Go to the Substack, my Substack, which is called Jules on the Beach, J-U-L-E-S, Jules on the Beach. It's just COVID legal focus, and you'll find all the relevant papers there. And all you scientist listeners, that's where you'll find all the peer-reviewed papers that you need to be able to be satisfied that everything that Alistair and I have been discussing here today has been worked out, qualified, and proven to be true. We have not gilded the lily here at all. We are trying to alert the New Zealand public as well as the global public to what is going on. The regulators all know what is going on. That's why we're in court. That's why they're trying to keep us out of court.
So, yeah, it does seem to me that if they had a case against you, they would argue the case and they would win the case, but they're actually trying to keep you out of court.
They're trying to keep us out of court using ridiculous devices. Alistair, when you go to a court and say, we have scientific proof that 24 million Australians on multiple occasions have been contaminated with not only synthetic RNA capable of reverse transcribing into the human genome, but with synthetic DNA, which goes directly into the nucleus and has been confirmed by McKernan's preliminary data to integrate with human DNA. And it has also been found to be self-replicating once inside our nucleuses. So this isn't theory. We're not in theory wonderland or fiction wonderland anymore. The integration events are occurring. The other peer review papers you'll find is that the integration event is somewhere between 10 to 20% from just single doses of this stuff, if it targets in a sufficient volume and concentration, you know, various cells, wherever these LMPs end up in human bodies. The other website, so people can really keep track of the GMO proceedings, give send go, all one word, givesendgo.com. Just put in GMO proceedings against Pfizer and Moderna. And that's where we've got Katie Ashby-Copens as the lead instructing solicitor, giving the very strict legal updates about the status of our GMO proceedings. And if anyone wants to help us out there, please feel free.
Well, it's an incredible story, and I really thank you for your time today. That's all we've got time for today, but we're going to be following very closely. Hopefully, we'll be able to do an update in the future as well. But also, you know, thanks for your dedication for this. If it wasn't for all the lawyers and doctors and scientists like yourself, these stories would never get examined. So, and that would be the death of not just science, but also democracy and freedom of speech and the scientific process as well. So thank you so much for what you're doing, Julian. And I hope we get to speak to you again soon.
Thank you, Alistair, and Reality Check Radio, bringing it to New Zealanders.
That's Julian Gillespie, a former Australian barrister who's been working with Voices for Freedom's own head of legal, Katie Ashby-Copens, in researching and bringing legal arguments to court against Pfizer and Moderna regarding the GMO nature of their COVID products. Make no mistake, the stakes on this topic are high. We're talking about our DNA. So the fact that Australian regulators and politicians won't engage on the subject on behalf of their citizens is troubling, and that the courts are essentially playing dumb and refusing to hear about it on behalf of those same citizens, and even appointing a judge who has represented Pfizer in the past, is startling. But like Julian Gillespie has just told us, this is a case that spreads its tentacles all around the world, into the cells of every human being who took the vaccines. They deserve to know the truth, and I suspect they're going to hear it one day, one way or the other. My name is Alastair Harding, and you've been listening to the Inquiry Sessions only on Reality Check Radio.
The RCR Inquiry Sessions. Unpacking the COVID response for an honest inquiry.